Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to this podcast. In today's segment, we will be talking with Ms. Carrie Bowers. She is the Director of Extended Detection and Response, also EDR, at a leading cybersecurity firm known as Agio, out of Virginia. Carrie, thanks for your time, and let's go and get started, please.
Great. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Let's go ahead and get started. We looked up your bio, and you seem to have a very deep and rich background in cybersecurity. We didn't do like a background check or anything like that, no, but we kind of snooped you up on LinkedIn and some Google searching, and can you tell us some of the highlights of your career? I know we just talked about you being in the Army, and that really intrigued my interest. Can you talk more about that and how you got to where you're at today?
Sure. Yeah. So I joined the Army in 2002. I was actually studying marine biology at the time at the University of New Hampshire. And shortly after September 11th, I just kind of found myself not really, interested in academia anymore. I really wanted to go serve. And so I kind of finished out my sophomore year and joined the Army as a counterintelligence agent. At the time, that was an entry-level position that since changed now. You have to have done some other job now to get that title. I went to the training, and then that wasn't enough for me, so then I did also volunteer to be airborne, and that landed me in the 82nd Airborne Division at Fort Bragg in North Carolina, and ended up spending my entire career there. From 2002 to 2010, that's an 8 years in.
Wow. Did you serve in Afghanistan or Iraq or any of those places during those years of operation? Or?
I did. Yeah, that's where I got a lot of my experience. Actually, was I did 3 tours in Iraq from 2003 to my last one was 2008. Then 1 tour in Afghanistan, and I even was part of the Hurricane Katrina relief in New Orleans in 2005.
Wow! I'd like to do a deeper dive into this, but we can probably save that for future podcasts. I think there's enough stuff that we can talk about for a long time. So how did you venture? Am I saying this correctly? Is it Agio or Agio? How am I saying it? Am I saying it the right way?
It's the Agio, yes.
Agio, okay. I just want to make sure. So how did you venture into Agio?
Yeah, so after I left the military, I kind of found myself wanting to still help people, but I didn't, want to stay in the military anymore. So I actually at first went into nursing. I had a plan to be a physician assistant and to apply to PA school. You have to have done some time as a nurse or some sort of, medical, paid training. So I started as a home health nurse aide for a gentleman that was basically on hospice care. He had small cell lung cancer, and I was basically looking after him, pretty much 5 days a week. And in doing that, I realized it was hard. It was hard emotionally, and, it wasn't quite the right fit. And I then pivoted to cybersecurity. I realized that was just another way that I could really help people, and it still drew on my knowledge of trying to understand data and still, this analytical school, skills that I had from, previous jobs. And that's what I ended up in my getting my degree in, was in IT security and IT management. And as part of that program, we would go to local ISSA meetings to kind of do that networking with other, IT professionals, cybersecurity professionals. And that's where I met a employee at the time of Agio that we just had a great conversation. And he was like, you'd be a great fit for my company. I don't know if we have any roles open, but you need to talk to somebody on my team in hiring, and, let's see what we can do. And that was in 2015, and at the time, the position they had open was on their project management office team for cybersecurity. So that's really where I started with OSU, was part of their PMO. And then about 3 years ago, I made the move over to our then MDR team, which is now XDR.
Okay, excellent. Now, can you tell us a little bit more about OSU and their offerings, and like how long you've been around, how large are you, do you have other offices in our countries? Can you just a little bit more deeper dive into that, please?
Sure, yeah. So OSU is, we are a combined cybersecurity and managed IT service provider. We are headquartered in New York. We do have an office in Raleigh, North Carolina. Then we also have folks, especially now since COVID, kind of remotely distributed all over the world. We do have a location in Belfast, Northern Ireland. We also have support teams out of Bangalore, India, and we're kind of growing and expanding in Canada now as well.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, so can you tell us like more about your offerings? I'm at your website right now. And you said you do like managed, you're approached like an MSP. So can you kind of like just elaborate a little bit more on those services? Like you do work with, I'm noticing with Azure, network management, disaster recovery. Can you say, give a little bit of an overview into that?
Sure, yeah. On the managed IT side, there's a lot of different service offerings. They, you know, do server management, network management, end user support, you know, they'll do desktop as a service. And then on the cybersecurity side, that's where we have a governance team that does the kind of cyclical projects of penetration tests, security risk assessments. They'll do simulated phishing campaigns. And then you have like a service of mine where it's this 24/7, 365 really security operations center monitoring and, you know, detecting and responding to threats that are identified.
Okay, excellent. Well, can you tell me a little bit more about your customer, your sweet spot? Is it like Fortune 500?
Yeah, it's really right around that 500 employee mark, and most of our clients are in the financial services, so that, you know, hedge funds, private equity firms. Then we do have other clients that are in that sort of public sector space, local government, really that come to us for payment card industry needs. So it may be higher education, it may be restaurant franchisees, and then we also have a healthcare sector as well, so large hospital systems or service providers or anybody that, you know, looking for that kind of HIPAA, security compliance needs, privacy needs, that kind of thing.
All right. Just a couple of offshoot questions here. So it seems like you primarily focus on the financial industry. Have you guys investigated, like, these hacking attacks, you know, like, on the crypto mining and the Bitcoin funds? Because every day I'm reading headlines that there's some hacking group that's stolen a bunch of Bitcoin from somewhere. Do you guys do anything with that, or?
Surprisingly not. We don't. I don't have too many of those kind of crypto miner things that come up. I would say in the last 2 years, we've had a couple, but it's not by far and large the biggest kind of culprit, if you will, of sort of the incident that really kind of reached that emergency level for us. And a lot of that's because we really tried to lock down, you know, servers and endpoints and, you know, have policies that kind of prohibit the use of kind of crypto mining tools. Where cryptocurrency comes into the conversation more is actually in incident response planning and sort of the ransomware resiliency kind of idea that if we did get ransomed and somebody asked us to pay in Bitcoin, you know, would we be prepared? And I think, you know, certainly government, you know, sanctions and everything else have kind of changed a lot of that direction too, where we're not really advising clients to, you know, pay the ransom. Instead, we say, you know, make sure you have your information backed up and that you can recover quickly so that you would have no need to really pay out a ransom through any sort of like Bitcoin if, you know, that were to happen.
Okay. Now, you mentioned HIPAA, like helping companies come into compliance. Do you also help companies come into compliance with GDPR and
GDPR, yes. That is the other privacy area that we do work in.
Okay, excellent, cool. Now let's do a deep dive here into what your role is at Agio as the director of the EDR XDR. What does your role entail? And if you can, give us an idea of what your everyday, what your job responsibility is like on a daily basis, like what your typical average day is like.
Sure, yeah. So I kind of start at a very simplistic answer, and that is really sort of the management of all the people, the processes, and the technology that go into delivering a 24/7, 365 monitoring and detection and response solution. I would say I spend quite a bit of my time, probably at least half, in that people management process. And I think that's what's really kind of unique about Agio is that they are very dedicated in making sure their managers are also leaders. And good leaders know that if you want quality results, it starts with having quality relationships. And so they really want, you know, people to be spending their time with their people, making sure that you have the right people in the right roles, doing the right tasks, and that they are engaged and want to be here doing the work that they're doing. So I do spend quite a bit of my time in sort of, you know, diving in with different people on my team and finding what training opportunities they need, or you know, making sure that, you know, everything's going well, you know, in their lives, and, you know, making sure that that work-life balance is appropriate. You know, because again, it just goes into, I know I'm going to get the best output if I have people that are, you know, here prepared to, you know, do their best work every day. But outside of that, you know, it's really because it don't stop there with just the people on your team. It's a lot of cross-departmental, you know, relationship building. You know, we currently don't work in a silo. I do a lot of work with, we have an accelerator team that's focused on data science and automation. So you can imagine I work very, very closely with them. You know, we stay in touch with, you know, marketing, with, you know, all these other, you know, teams within the company. And then also vendors. I spend quite a lot of time, you know, meeting with our vendors and making sure that, you know, I'm giving them feedback on how, you know, the product that we're using can be better. And then certainly you can't get away from, you know, being an escalation point and helping to, you know, problem solve if you have clients that are having issues. You know, that's obviously always a part of being in a management role is, you know, kind of doing that resolution work.
Excellent. Now, with the, you know, with the remote workforce now, you know, there's this term called EDR, you know, endpoint detection response. You know, when COVID first hit, when the remote workforce started, there was a lot of, you know, worry about, you know, protecting the, you know, the network lines of communication, you know, to and from the points of destination and origination. And because of that, a lot of, you know, IT security teams kind of neglected to protect the endpoints. And because of that, you know, the cyber attacker kind of found their home there where they could stay, you know, covertly and move in a lateral fashion. Now it seems like companies are paying a lot of attention to this to put, you know, security there. But now we've heard this new term called XDR, extended detection response. In fact, I just wrote a big article for a client on this. Can you tell us what XDR is, how it's different from EDR, and how has Agio evolved from providing MDR services to moving to XDR? I mean, do you make use of AWS services, or like, I know Microsoft Azure has a bunch of XDR services. Can you really get into a lot of detail and stuff, please, for our audience?
Sure. So XDR is, like you said, it's extended detection and response. And really, at a high level, what that means is that this idea of this, you know, single pane of glass view, that you can take everything that a client has or wants to have for the security stack, all the security tools, and throw it all into one place, a, you know, big data lake, where you can then have additional machine learning applied to enrich and process the information, and then you can also layer that in with, you know, kind of security orchestration and automated responses so that ultimately you can have a platform that you can build upon to make sure that you have better data and also more automated responses that a machine can look at and do that doesn't require human input.
Yeah,
what we use, we have a,
go ahead, please.
I was going to say, so the vendor that we work with, they're called Stellar Cyber, and, you know, they've been really great, and, you know, really enjoyed working with them so far, and what's really unique is that they don't require you to have everything with a specific vendor. They're really vendor agnostic. So when I'm looking to onboard a new client, of course I'm going to ask, okay, what all do you have in place for your security stack? You know, do you use EDR? What do you use? We currently support BlackBerry Cylance. If clients don't have that, that's usually one thing that we'll try to upsell. But if they have CrowdStrike, if they have Carbon Black, you know, whatever they have, we'll make sure that, you know, we integrate that along with their Active Directory, with their Office 365, with their VPN, with their firewalls, like every single thing that has, you know, security relevant information that I want to monitor and be able to have that machine learning applied to look at, you know, anomalies or suspicious or malicious activity that the human brain just can't find all on its own. I want to make sure it's all in one place where it can all be, you know, processed and, you know, eventually have, you know, an alarm trigger then that then a human can look at and say, okay, something needs to be done here.
Okay. Well, so it seems like you make a lot of use of AI. In fact, I just actually wrote a book on AI and it came out in February. But, yeah, AI is so... What kind of, like, I mean, the AI and ML, I mean, if you get into, what kind of algorithms do you use? And, like, where do you get your data feeds from? How do you create the models? And how does the learning take place, if you can get into all this detail?
A lot of that is, I think, Stellar proprietary. I wouldn't say that I'd have all the information into that. And that is why we kind of went with them as a vendor, because it did seem like they have a lot of robust algorithms, as you say. You know, AI is a very broad term. I would say this is kind of more of a very narrow AI and type of machine learning that they have. They do have, you know, this kind of three flavors of it, like supervised, unsupervised, and that sort of reinforcement or adaptive machine learning. But all the real, like, nuts and bolts underneath all that is certainly, you know not it's very much Stellar in that they own. I know that they don't have, you know, all that information and exactly how they built that.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, how are clients benefiting from the XDR approach? Can you give some examples of that?
Sure, yeah, and I think in multiple ways. I think that, you know, one, just the fact that I can integrate whatever you have in place. Like, I don't require you to have everything Cisco, everything Palo Alto. Whatever you have, I can throw into the single platform. I think just the machine learning that that XDR platform does have is certainly beneficial, again, into looking for the thing, finding the thing that a human would miss. And certainly the ability to then automate and do that sort of orchestrated responses. And that's where, you know, certainly the investment that Ajay has made into having an accelerator team with data science as well to say, okay, XDR, what are the processes that your analysts are doing every day that they don't need to be doing that we could, you know, if it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 steps, that we can build a script and, you know, build all the conditions and then say, okay, this is the response that needs to happen. I don't need a human to do this. What we've been able to find is I've been able to then have our analysts focus on the more proactive threat hunting work and really kind of digging into what else is there, what else are we missing, what else needs to, you know, be put in there. And I think, too, it's been more cost it's been more open for our clients to be able to afford with this model and how we're selling this, because instead of doing a data consumption model, we've been able to do an asset-based model. So we've really been able to overlay XDR into a lot of our managed IT offerings. And an example where that's beneficial is that in the last year or so, the incidents that we've actually had to respond to that have kind of met that critical level of needing a war room, about 52% of my clients right now also have managed IT services for Agio, but of those clients, only 13%, really a little bit less than that, actually ever have like a war room situation that I would have to be involved in. So we can see that having the XDR plus with our managed IT, the closeness of how we work together, the ability to quickly triage things when they're found has really been beneficial in kind of limiting the impact of something when it happens, but also just frankly like prohibiting it from ever happening to beginning. Because of just the interconnectedness of the way our teams work together.
Okay, excellent. Do you have any client success stories you can share with us, or any client testimonials about giving too much confidential information away?
One example is, of course, you know, anytime that you hear ransomware, it's scary, but you know, what we have been able to do is with one client, we were able to find it really quickly on a server where basically it found where they were managed by us, but we found where a server was left exposed to the internet and ransomware was put on that, and we were able to very quickly contain that, take it offline, and help them really kind of eradicate and recover from that very quickly before it ever had the opportunity to do that lateral movement and to spread from, you know, to another server, to another server, really kind of lock down their entire network. So just the timeliness, and again, like the whole benefit of an XDR solution and having this machine learning applied is helping us to identify, you know, the real, you know, threats faster so that you don't have analysts bogged down in noise and, you know, alerts that really don't have any value.
Okay, excellent. Now, Carrie, we know that there are a ton of other cybersecurity vendors out there, right? What, 2,000 plus just here in this country alone. What separates Agio from the rest of the pack? In other words, like, suppose I'm a prospect. Why should I say, Carrie, I want to come to you and have you do my work when it comes to XDR? What separates you from the rest of the crowd?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. I think first, like I mentioned before, this investment that we have in this accelerator team, I think that definitely sets us apart, the fact that we have another team totally dedicated into helping all our service delivery managers identify opportunities to automate processes that they currently have humans doing that they don't necessarily need a human to do. And that's a regular conversation week over week, you know, in identifying these things that, you know, can help us be more efficient. But I think the other thing that really sets us apart is just the transparency we have with all our clients. You have access to the same platforms that I do. So if I'm, you know, setting up your tenant, if I'm including some vulnerability scanning, if, you know, we're setting up an EDR solution for you as well, like all those tools that we're going to use and point to one XDR solution to monitor it all, you're going to have the same access that we do. And not only that, we're also going to educate you on how to use it, how to look at the alarm, and why we make, you know, decisions that we do based on what we're seeing. So it becomes much more of a partnership. It's not just they phone it in and say, yeah, I've got somebody looking at my environment. It's all about the kind of education in, you know, how these tools work, how they benefit you, and on top of that, we talk about, you know, trends that we're seeing, or, you know, going back to the fact that, you know, a lot of these threats start with human error, in when I was mentioning sort of the incidents that we had to deal with, like true like war room level incidents, you know, we're still seeing over 90% start with phishing. It still starts with, you know, that those kind of basic things that, you know, don't click on the bad things, you know, like you should, you know, don't open that attachment if you're not expecting it. So I think there's also a benefit that we share knowledge based on the vertical as well. So it's almost like you're part of like a club in a way. So, you know, so if you're in the financial sector, we're going to be able to speak about the stress for everybody in the financial sector or everyone in healthcare. So it's not just you by yourself.
Excellent. So that's wonderful. Now, let's kind of switch gears here back, you know, maybe by the back for like the last year or two. You know, when COVID-19 started to make the headlines in China, nobody ever thought, and I never thought, that, you know, it would grip the whole world like it did, you know, like right now. And everybody kept thinking, okay, it was going to come and go, but it's going to be with us like the flu. Now, with that, we've seen all kinds of new cyber attacks, you know, that have originated. You know, we've seen the Zoom bombing last year. Now we're seeing state threat actors. Now, this year, ransomware has been, like, the biggest thing that's happening. And as a professional myself, I think the biggest fear now is critical infrastructure. I don't think going forward into the future, I don't think we're going to see, you know, airplanes crash into buildings like we did for 9/11. I just think we're going to see a massive critical infrastructure shutdown by some kind of cyber attacker from God knows who where. What advice do you give to companies? I'm sure you've been asked hundreds of thousands of times. What advice do you give them to protect themselves from this kind of thing? Obviously, you know, everybody's at risk. You really can't have, you know, a bulletproof Kevlar, but what do you tell them?
I like that, bulletproof Kevlar. You're right, there is no silver bullet solution. And I think what we really advise our clients is this kind of brilliance in the basics that we, you know, really try to enforce. Like, there is no one thing that's going to protect you. We say, you know, you really need to, one, you know, make cybersecurity a priority. It should be talked about at that kind of C-level. You should really consider, you know, investing in some sort of cybersecurity, you know, program and, you know, make sure that you're doing the basic things that are going to keep you, you know, more secure than sort of the average bear, if you will. So we talk about things like making sure, even as basic as MFA, you want to make sure you have MFA enabled. You want to make sure that you have a solution for, you know, web processing. You have a solution for email protection, that you have like an EDR solution. And not just that you have these solutions, but you have somebody that's dedicated to managing them appropriately. So when I go back to the idea of incident response and sort of the lessons learned, you know, sometimes we'll find that clients had an EDR solution that would have protected them, but the endpoints that got impacted didn't have an agent on it that had that EDR package, or they had it in a default setting that wasn't actually applying any sort of auto-quarantine. So it's not just buying the solutions and thinking about having the solutions, but actually, you know, keeping them managed up to date, having robust vulnerability management. You know, we see a lot of clients that, you know, we discuss vulnerabilities and say, okay, you know, you need to make sure that you address these critical ones, these high ones. And that's not even just at work, it's also at home, because, you know, to your point, like, there's a lot more remote workers working from home, and, you know, if they're using their home network to access, you know, company assets, you know, you still want to make sure that all of that is being protected, that they're all doing the right thing. And I think it's that you make sure cybersecurity is an ongoing conversation. I think that's the most challenging part about being in the field, is that it's so dynamic and it's constantly changing and evolving, and you need a partner that's going to help you to, you know, make sure that you're consistently raising that fence and doing the right thing and practicing the right, you know, configuration settings and everything else to be prepared when, you know, the bad things happen.
Okay, excellent. Now, one thing I want to ask you is, you know, probably before COVID actually, I have a manager account, and I kind of wanted to, you know, create my own virtual machine, and I did that just for kind of play around with it. I got an invoice from my cloud services provider for like $200 just for having a virtual server out there for not really doing anything. I'm going, what? I thought this was supposed to be cost savings, you know? So, I don't know. I mean, I didn't really do anything with it, and I'm still being hit with a, you know, $200 invoice, you know, so there are hidden costs. I know Microsoft's really kind of notorious for that. They'll charge you for anything or anything under the sun for any kind of services, and they have all kinds of, I mean, it's confusing, but so what are your thoughts about, like, doing total migration to the cloud versus an on-prem or like a hybrid model, like cloud and an on-prem solution? What are your thoughts about that? I mean, have clients asked you about that for, like, doing cloud migrations, that kind of thing?
Yeah, they do sometimes, and I kind of read a lot about this, too. There's a lot of people that are very anti-cloud. They just think it's the most insecure thing out there. I think you always kind of look at it through a business lens. You know, I mean, like, there's always sort of a availability and performance and, you know, advancement into moving to the cloud. I personally think the cloud, as long as you're doing the right things and are trying to be very deliberate in, you know, having your security checklist and making sure you're monitoring for changes and for anything that could be, you know, suspicious, you know, happening, you know, in anything that you have in the cloud, I think that it's kind of a done deal in a way. I think that anybody that's going to refuse to move to the cloud, you know, unless they have a business case to why they don't need to do that, I think it's really going to be, you know, kind of impractical at some point.
Okay. Now let's kind of segue into the last three quarters of the show here. There are various issues I kind of like to talk to you about and kind of get your opinion on. The first one is the Internet of Things. Now, you know, I mean, I've written about this, have all this interconnectedness because I think it just opens the, you know, the attack surface for the cyber attacker. I mean, as I think I've told you before in our previous conversations, I hate technology. I mean, I'm in cybersecurity, but I really do hate technology. I hate mobile apps. In fact, I still drive a 2003 Honda Civic. It's old analog instrumentation. And, like, just a few months ago, I met my financial advisor, and here this guy's like a James Bond kind of card. You remember from that movie, I think, The Octopussy or something, where this car comes out, you know, from the water, you know, and he and his spy or whatever. You know, I mean, he literally, he talks, and then the damn car, like, backed up going, huh? You know, what do you think of all this? I mean, do you have, like, a smart home or a smart car or anything like that? I mean, I'm a very old-fashioned kind of guy, and I just don't like having all this connectivity. But what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm very much like you too. I don't have a smart home. I don't have a smart car either. I think those that work in cybersecurity become somewhat paranoid, and you know, they want to have you know, big needs for privacy. So I think it's certainly one of the biggest challenges we have. That's for sure. The idea that you know, there's just, you know, infinite expansion of everything that's going to be connected on the internet in some way, shape, or form. That, like you said, you know, increases that surface, you know, attack area, and makes it really challenging to, you know, those that are responsible for protecting, you know, those devices, those things. And I think that's where, you know, the AI, the machine learning comes into play, because I feel like that's the only way to really kind of close that gap. As, you know, you read, you know, all sorts of reports, whether it's, you know, Harvard Business Review or Forbes or anybody, you know, that's writing about, you know, the talent gap and the shortage of cybersecurity workers, you know, that gap is expanding as there's more and more things that are out there that need to be monitored and protected. And, you know, I think that's where, you know, people really need to consider investing or looking into something like XDR or, you know, whatever it is, you know, something that's going to help you to automate processes and use things like machine learning to identify when there are variances from baselines for all these different things out there now connected to the internet.
Wow, okay, cool. Okay, now the next thing is AI and ML. Now, we did talk about I mentioned, you know, my dad was a professor of neuroscience at Purdue. He was involved with spinal cord regeneration research. And one thing he always told me is that we will never, ever fully understand the human brain. At best, we'll come to understanding one-tenth of what it's all about, one-tenth of 1%. Now, I know AI, we're trying to mimic the human processes of the human brain, you know, when trying to, you know, mimic the neuronic activity, you know, inputs, outputs, blah, blah, blah. But when it comes to cybersecurity and AI, it's just unfortunately one of those big buzzwords that's being bandied about right now. You know, you hear a lot of vendors saying, oh, I've got AI in my cybersecurity tool. You know, the customer's all excited about it. And says, oh, I've got AI in my tool. I'm fully protected. You know, I don't know. It's just such a bad buzzword right now in AI. And I really cringe when I hear all these vendors come in and say, oh, we got this new AI tool. You know, and really all it is carrying is garbage in, garbage out, right? What are your thoughts on all this? I mean, it has useful purposes, you know, but there's also the dark side to it, like with deep fakes, like during the last presidential campaign. What are your thoughts on all this?
Yeah, I think you know, ultimately what you got to recognize is that it's not going to replace the need for very smart, conversant humans to kind of monitor and to supervise, if you will, whatever you want to call it. You know, like I say with, you know, kind of the solution that we're using, you know, maybe, you know, I really consider it more of a narrow AI, meaning that artificial intelligence is this more broad term, but what it really has is this machine learning that is looking for those, you know, changes in whatever, you know, whether it's an input specifically that you're asking it to look at, or if you're asking it to be more unsupervised and look for, you know, any sort of random changes that the human eye would miss, or, you know, one that's more that reinforced or adaptive type of machine learning that requires that human feedback loop. I think that's just the big part to not lose sight of is the fact that whatever you want to call it, whatever the new buzzword is going to be, I think, yes, it's important to have, you know, continue to, you know, invest in, you know, do this research and development into ways that we can use technology to find where bad things are happening that a human just doesn't have the time or, you know, the ability to find and see. But at the same time, understand that, to your point about garbage in, garbage out, like, it can't just do it by itself. You still have to have a human that is telling it, yes, that is the, you know, right response, or no, that is not what I wanted to see, or, okay, thank you for now flagging this that it needs my attention, but now I have to do something with it. Like, it does not replace humans at all. It helps humans to be more efficient.
Okay, excellent. Okay. Now, the next thing, and we did talk about this briefly, was the data privacy laws. You know, we've seen the GDPR, we've got the CCPA now coming out. When COVID hit, you know, they didn't really enforce anything because of financial concerns. But now we are seeing uptick in this. Now, every state kind of wants to have their own version of the CCPA. We've seen the CMSC come out, and God knows where that's at because there's so much confusion with that. I'm kind of, not to get political here, but I'm kind of in favor of having like a Department of Cybersecurity, kind of like how we have the DHS when that evolved right after 9/11. What do you think about that? Because I think we need to have a centralized something in our federal government to legislate all this downward, right? I mean, there's just so much confusion. What do you think about that Department of Cybersecurity?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that a centralized body like that, focus on cybersecurity to provide direction and guidance to, you know, both government and private sector is becoming more and more important, especially as, you know, you're talking about early on sort of the different, you know, nation state sponsored, you know, threat actors out there doing these very, you know, sophisticated, you know, advanced persistent threats type of task. I think that's a lot of what's driving the need for someone, you know, a more centralized body to, you know, provide the information, provide guidance, whether it's around privacy, like you said, or whether it's around, infrastructure and the next, colonial pipeline attack or, whatever it is it's going to be, I think people are looking for answers. And I think the more that you have a centralized community where there's the sharing of information and we're all kind of looking at it and have the same mission, the better, results we're going to have. Instead, right now, we're all very fragmented and think that, we're all going to do it differently. But we're all kind of seeing the same things. We all have the same challenges. And I think there's a certain openness that needs to come out of that with having, like you said, sort of a department focused on these kind of challenges.
Okay, excellent. Well, one question. Do you guys do anything? Is Aja anything to the CMC for clients? Have you done anything that you work with that, like being like, what they call it, C-3PAO? It kind of reminds me of C-3PO from Star Trek, but or Star Wars or whatever. But are you guys like professors or anything like that?
I think we're looking to build that offering out. Like I said before, more on the cyber governance side. I know they do have a pretty robust GDPR offering, but I'm not sure how much more in the privacy kind of offering they're looking outside of, obviously, when I mentioned HIPAA before. There's both the HIPAA security rule and the privacy rule, which we both do both assessments of.
Yeah, okay, cool. Now, the last issue I want to kind of touch on base here is COVID-19 and the remote workforce. And again, we did talk about that. Now, I do have my views on how the whole thing got started, and we won't get political here on that. But, nobody ever thought that the remote workforce would happen the way it has happened today. I mean, people were thinking it's going to happen like 5 or 6 years down the road. And honestly, people are happy working from home. Even they're starting to poo-poo the idea of a hybrid work model. In fact, I think when COVID was starting to kind of die down a little bit, employers were making, workers come back to the office, they quit. So how is it at Aja, how has the remote workforce COVID impacted you? Are you guys all virtual? How has it impacted your clients? And what are your plans for the future?
Yeah, so we all are work from home right now. So we all are, remote. I personally was remote before then because I started in our North Carolina office and then had to move to Virginia for personal reasons. I was already working from home since 2016, so for me personally, it really wasn't that much of a difference. I already had my own home office and already had, all these monitors and all the equipment from work, so I've been here, working from home for a while now, so it wasn't really that much of an impact for me personally. I think our company actually did very well in how we kind of adapted to it pretty quickly. I think, the impact it's had on people personally is those that, didn't have a space, to work in. It's been challenging. A lot of them are, have families, have kids that have been at home. And so I think it's been very disruptive in sort of the work focus, not having a place to work and having kids running in and out. And, I've certainly seen that both with our clients and for us. The different workers. I think too, there are different teams that I think it's been, more impactful on than others. Certainly our sales team, I think, have had more struggles because they're, kind of more outgoing by nature, extroverted by nature. So, they're used to going out and meeting with clients and going out to restaurants and, doing all that. And, trying to do that virtually has been really hard. I think it's interesting that you bring this up. So I was listening to NPR the other day, but they were talking about, a lot of people are going to want to have sort of that sweet spot of a hybrid work model where maybe they still work from home 3 days a week and go into an office, maybe 2 days out of the work week. I think eventually that may be what Aja moved to, probably not until, late 2022, maybe as late as 2023. I think we're still kind of playing it by ear, just like a lot of companies. We do still have, some office spaces. So there is still, an opportunity to go into the office if there was a need. But I really do think that work from home is going to be more appealing to a lot of people in the long run. I've kind of talked to other friends that they're like, you know, if my company makes me go back to work, I may look elsewhere because I'm enjoying working from home. I like not having to have the commute, and, you know, I'm much more productive. I'm able to, you know, get a lot more done than, you know, having the drive-by, the kind of, you know, the water cooler talk and all that. But, you know, it depends. You know, I think some people, you know, also look forward to that, you know.
Yeah. I think, Carrie, another scary thing is there's a thing that Microsoft has come out with, this thing called the Metaverse, where we all are represented by avatars. And in fact, I just wrote an article for that in the client. I'm starting to think, okay, with the remote workforce, the next thing, is this going to be the next thing after that? Are we all going to be represented by avatars? You know, that's a whole different topic for a different podcast. That's just another scary thought. And, you know, there are people that like that.
Yeah, every time I see those Metaverse commercials, or I've even seen us reading about a person that had their VR, whatever, Oculus home setup. Like, so they look like they're actually, like, they have their entire, you know, virtual desktop set up all in this sort of Metaverse. And I think I personally am not ready for that. But I don't know. I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I hate it. I don't like that idea because I feel like we're losing our identities. But, you know, and as I've asked my other friends of my age, you know, when we're back in high school, back in the 1980s in college, how did we do it? You know, I mean, we didn't have Google, we didn't have smartphones. How did we write research papers? You know, I guess it was the old-fashioned encyclopedia, you know. But anyway, well, as we start to wrap up our show now, Carrie, just a couple more final questions. As we fast track now to 2022, how do you think the landscape is going to change next year in terms of cybersecurity? What's going to be that one big threat that you think is going to be out there?
Yeah, I think that things like the solar winds, like I say, I think this kind of stuff, the supply chain attacks are going to continue. I don't think we've done with those. I don't think, you know, they're over. I think we're probably going to see another one of those that's going to hit and be very disruptive and be hard to recover from. I think it's just going to be hard to predict who it's going to be and when. But I really do see that continuing to be the biggest opportunity. You know, if I put my mind in, you know, put my bad actor hat on, you know, certainly that would be who I'd be going after. I'd be like, all right, let me go after, you know, somebody that has got the connections already built in, that if I hit them, I'm going to get all the, you know, bang for my buck, if you will, because of all the connections they have, all the people that are part of their supply chain.
Yeah, so now, finally, if there is someone out there in our audience or someone who listens to the show down the road and they want to reach out to you about XDR services, what's the best way to contact you?
Oh, yeah. They can find me on LinkedIn. But also, just emailing me at Ajo. It's carrie.bowers@ajo.com.
Well, Carrie, thank you very much for your time this afternoon. It's been a great show, and have a great day. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
Take care.